November 3rd, 1978, talking to Roger Dayton in Carrickville.
When we moved on top of the church, that would, couldn't, the chopper couldn't take. But they were evacuated by the chopper when it was hovering over. They let down the cable, and they had a big basket, and that way they were evacuated.
The old people?
Yeah, a couple of old seats. Was that? You see the Sally down here, old lady Sally?
Yeah.
It was one of them. I remember there was two of them. Or maybe there was another, not two old people, one of them was older than one of them, young fellow. But I remember this old lady Sally down here when he was being lifted. And that basket wasn't steady, you know, swimming back and forth, and was just turning around this way. I guess she was pretty scared. Yeah. I guess I would. Anybody would too, you know. For that, the first thing they ever got into like that. And that's a dangerous thing. I heard when the plane is hovering like that. You know?
Oh yeah, I guess.
Oh yeah, you could be too much weight on one side and just tip.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how long did everybody have to stay on top of the church?
Let me see. About 3 nights, I guess. And then we stayed, we moved back when the water dropped down, we moved back to the school there. Anyway, it was, we stayed, the water was all back for 6 days here in that year. And then in 66, there was another flood. But it was just for a couple of days. And that's the last flood we had in 66. Of course, those floods were due to the ice jam down here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those days when, it was 6 days that you were up on top of the church?
No. When the water was coming up, we stayed in the schoolroom for a couple of days. And then when the water started coming up higher, we moved to the church roof. And maybe we stayed on the church roof for about three nights. No, actually, about a couple of nights. And then when the water started moving down, going down, we moved back to the school for another another couple of nights.
What did you have to do during those days?
Not much. Of course, they'd make us stand guard, you know, a couple of men, while all the rest of the men sleep, you know, in case the water just started coming up fast, we'd wake up the men. And that's about all we did. Maybe played little cards, poker, and that's all we did. You know, we couldn't do very much. Maybe we cooked. Of course, we took turns cooking. Of course, there was a sea ration that the army left with us. And then, of course, maybe somebody would shoot a duck or two, and then we'd have that, make a soup out of that. Like I said, we'd take turns cooking and play cards or whatever.
You had a gas boat to get around it?
No, we just had these outboard motors. Everybody had their own. And before the flood there, I made a tank raft for my dogs, six dogs, you know, four bears in each corner. And then when the flood came, I just moved them on there. And then they were just where I left the raft. Of course, it was kind of rough when I started feeding them. They'd jump over the side of the raft, and you'd have to pull them on the raft again. That's the only rough time they gave me there.
Is that because they were excited about eating?
Yeah, that's right. They were excited about eating. Mm. Sometimes I couldn't even get to them. You know, the ice would be all over town. The ice wasn't rough. You know, they just drifted over the bank. No force behind it. And then sometimes the ice would be piling up in front of the raft, so I couldn't get to them.
Well, how could you get around in your boat?
We could make our way through the ice. But before the ice came over, came over the bank that we moved around pretty good with the boats. But then most of the ice was near the bank, you know, and but most of the small pieces came further back. And of course, we make our way between them, push them out of the way. That way we made our way around. Mm-hmm. Of course, after the water went down below the bank, there it was pretty sloppy all over. Then we had to clean up our house. There was about 1/4 inch mud in every house. We had to clean that out.
When did the women and kids come back?
Of course, they were first. They were evacuated all the way up to Fairbanks. Huh. I don't know. There was that Campion Hill there. They would have been dropped off there. The last flood there in 66, that's where they were put. They were evacuated to there, women and children. I'd say a couple of days after the women and children came back, I'd say about a couple of days after the water went down below the bank. But the trip to Fairbanks, it took longer for them to come back.
How did they come back?
By this big army planes, big army planes. I forgot what they call them. Hercules or something? Hercules, yeah, something like that, yeah.
And they had landed Galena?
At Galena, and then they were brought back here by chopper again. Mm. Because no planes couldn't land right away in the field. There was big chunk of ice here and there. So they had to wait till that melted out before the planes could land there again. Mm-hmm.
Does anybody ever talk about what they'd do if there was a flood now?
Well, maybe if there's anything heavy that belonged to the whole village, they talk about moving to higher ground, moving higher off the ground.
What kind of things?
Say a pile of wood. Maybe you'd put that away on the roof of some house. And that's the only thing they talk about, besides the sea to that all the boats were ready and everybody was ready to move to the school. And then if there was any young boys among us, they'd tell them they had to behave. And that's about all they do, the councilmen. And most of the time, everybody was on their own. But then we'd all gather in the school hall.
How did village of Kaikuk get started?
Oh, I've never heard of how it got started. Hmm.
You said people used to live up there on Nikolai Street.
Nikolai Street, that was in the 1850s. That's the first, of course there was no village here at that time. Of course they had a village here where they could hunt. Hunt and trap, I suppose, and there was not much down this way.
Was there a name for that one at Nikolai
Street? No, there was no name for it. The way it got its name, Nikolai Street, an old man used to live there, an old bachelor. His name was Nikolai, and that's how the slough got its name. It runs out from the Kaikuk River all the way out below Galena. Mm-hmm. They call it Bear Creek, this creek below Galena. But the Nikolai Street runs into that Bear Creek. And that's the way sometimes people from Glen, they'd run all the way, they'd make a shortcut that way. They want to go up the Kyrgyz River, or just to hunt, mm-hmm. or fish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the spring when the water is high.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So then, when did the people start building their cabins down here?
Oh, gee, I don't remember. You'd have to ask somebody old, much older than I was.
Let's see. But you were born in Mulato, right?
Yeah, 1921. Yeah. And the village was established here long before that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did you come back up here to Kaiku? When did you come back up from Mulato to Kaiku?
Well, with my parents always lived here. I was just born down there.
Oh, then they just came up right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course, my mother was from Mulato. Somebody adopted her down there. And then my father was from up here, and then he'd court her. And then as soon as they got married, they just moved up here, I suppose. Yeah.
So you just went down there. She went down there to the hospital.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was born in that hospital, and then a couple of months before that, they were married, and then after they got married, I suppose they moved up here. Mm-hmm. Of course, my father never lived down there; just my mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing I always wonder about. And I always ask people, they go out and they're trapping and hunting and out quite a ways from the village. Sometimes there are some things that are really strange that they can't understand, they can't really explain. Some strange things that might happen. Maybe sounds, strange sounds they might hear.
Well, in my lifetime, I've never heard, I've never seen anything. But then, from what I understood, a lot of people seen and heard things. But in my lifetime, I've seen something, I heard something. That was in the year of 51, with my first child was just about a year old at that time. And we were trapping over on the Hushley, Flats. And then, of course, we spent the Christmas over there. And then between Christmas and New Year's, we started moving back. And when we moved back on the Kyrgyz River to our main winter camp, there was three cabins there at that time. I walked ahead of dogs and my wife, Annie, and then Franklin, my brother, they were handling the sleigh. Because it's snowed a foot at that time. And I walked up the bank. And of course, I start shoveling away the snow in front of the doorway, and tramping the snow with the snowshoes where the dogs were going to be tied. And I heard the door keep opening over in that next building, next house there, keep opening and shut. You even hear how it just squeak. I keep hearing that. And my uncle there, he had his wife was living at that time. You were living in that cabin. I thought they were still there.
And,
yeah, Albert's, their family. I keep hearing, but I didn't think nothing because they were living in that house. And I keep hearing the door open and shut. I thought they were going in and out of the house. So I didn't think nothing of it. So I just keep working around my house there. And then strange thing that I never see anybody come out. Even my mother and my stepfather. And I went down to their house, opened their house there, and went in. There was a note on the table. I read it. It says that we're going down for Christmas. We're all going down, it says. And then I started feeling funny. I don't know what I was hearing, that door open, keep opening and shut for. I mean, how come I was hearing it? And then I went over in front of my uncle's house there. There was no sign of track there. Yeah. That's the only time I heard something strange in my lifetime. Mm-hmm.
When you're out traveling, are there places that are not good to camp? Now, some places that somebody really shouldn't stop and camp?
Well, I suppose so, but I've, in this area, it's not that way. But then, in a place where, in a camp where somebody passed away just recently, maybe a person would be afraid to camp there. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that? Is what somebody seeing or hear something from other people?
Yeah, some people say that.
Oh yeah, I suppose that's true. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people tell us that they're, especially in their places, that they wouldn't stop.
You know? Oh yeah, that's right. Haunted or something. Yeah. Like.
Mm-hmm. Different places. I'm pretty scared they talk about woodsmen.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bigfoot. I guess something like Bigfoot.
What do you remember about World War II? You were in the army for the whole time?
Well, I was inducted in 42 and then got out in 46.
Were you ever around Keokuk here?
Oh, I come back. I had a couple of furloughs, yeah. I came back here.
What was it like in the village in those years?
Oh, well, it was just about the same as now. It's the same thing, there are no changes, except that people are just living right in town. In those years, people were out living in their trapping camps. And I didn't find any changes. I mean, that's the only change I find. Between that time and now. But when I came back on my furlough, I didn't find anything. Any changes?
Do you remember like airplanes? Were there a lot of airplanes going over or anything like that?
Oh, no. Oh. The first bunch of planes I've seen was when the Glen Airfield was coming up. And these Lend-Lease planes coming over. That's the first big number of planes I've ever seen.
They all came at the same time? Ah,
yes, in a bunches now and then. Of course, they landed in Glenna, refueled there, I suppose, and spent some time there, and then on to Nome. Yeah, that's the only large number of planes I see at any time.
Like, how many planes would come in a day?
In a day, I don't remember. I've seen about eight in one bunch.
All flying together?
Not flying, just together, yeah. Of course, it was between Glenna and Fairbanks. I was going back to Fairbanks that time.
When you're trapping with your dogs, how far would you go each day?
Oh, the last time I trapped, I'd start from here all the way up to our main camp. That was in 63. That's the longest, furthest out I've ever been from here, which is 50 miles from here, to our main camp. And then from the main camp up the Katila River for another 40 miles. No, not quite 40, 35 miles. Trapping marten. That's the furthest I went. In other years, we would just go up in the fall with our whole outfit in boats to our main camp on the Cuyahoga River. And from there, it wasn't too far where we had to go. But lately, it was pretty far since it was from here. Sometimes we had a tough time from here since it snowed about this much. Then we had dog teams in the years. Yeah, that's the first, that's the longest I ever trapped. I mean, longest I ever went out in the 63 with dogs. I did pretty good that year. But then we used to have a lot of bills in them years, big bills, we had to pay that. Everything we got from here for the whole winter, we all had to go on the book. And I had to pay that.
Do you remember, how much a guy would have in bills?
Oh, well, sometimes it depends on who you are and where you're trapping. Sometimes the storekeeper or here would let us run over 1,000. That's the most. And maybe some people were over 2,000. Yeah. And from there, 1,000 on down, I suppose. But I've never heard anybody going over 2,000 from here. As far back as I remember. Mm-hmm.
When you're trapping, Martin, do you have a favorite kind of thing that you use for bait?
Well, we use mostly rabbit's foot and dry fish. We used to tie it together. That was the first year I started traveling with my old man. I was 14 years old then. And he'd use that most of the time. And then as the years came along, we just used mostly dry fish. And then some other people would try a decayed meat, as you know, it smells quite a bit. They'd use that one. Or whatever that smells, it's got a strong smell to it. And then for the last 4 or 5 years I've been trapping, Martin, I use this fish roe, egg roe. You know, you put them in the can in summer and they'd rot and they'd make a strong smell. And then I suppose an animals would like that. I put that in a baking powder can, all broken in little pieces. And whenever I sit that, I just pour a little back for bait. And then it's got a strong smell to it, you know, and Martin would smell it from long ways. And lately I've just been using that.
Yeah.
Of course, some men would keep some meat in the house till it spoils and it causes a strong smell. They'd cut it up in little pieces. They use that for Martin bait too. Mm. And moose lungs, you know, they're colored red. They'd use that. Oh, they'd use anything for bait. Sometimes even red paper. You know, Martin think it's a meat or something. They'd go for that too. Mm-hmm. Red ribbon. They'd use that.
How about the lynx?
Pardon?
You ever trap lynx?
I never did any regular trapping for lynx. But then I've caught them in snares, which were set for otters. I've caught a couple of lynx in my lifetime. That's all I've ever caught. But then they were, like I say, they were caught in a set that were meant for other animals. Mm-hmm. Around 1928 or 1929, there used to be quite a bit of them lynx. And I remember my parents getting quite a few of them. They were pretty abundant in them years. And after that, there wasn't too much. Now and then, you'd see two or three in a bunch. A couple or a family in a bunch. But then they disappear somehow, one way or another. And then, like now, you'd hardly see any link track. Yeah.
How about bear? You talk about in the fall time you go out and you hunt bear in the hall.
Yes, that's right.
Do you remember any particular time that you did that?
I caught the only bear I caught in my lifetime was in the fall of 1947. Of course, I wasn't hunting no bear at that time. I just came to it. I was looking for a trail for trapping up the Catila River, I'd say about 11 miles. We had a cabin there too. And I was going to, looking for a trail northeast on the hills where my parents used to trap a long time ago on the Lightning Flats, they call that. I was looking for a way to trap there. Then that was before freeze-up. Of course, I had pack, axe and gun. I figured to be out about two, three nights camping. And then I was following a ridge there, and I came to a lump. And then I see a pile of mud in front of there. And then I knew right away it was bear. And then, of course, I got out my pack right away and loaded. I had this 33 rifle with me. And I went over right away, and I looked in there, and I seen a big bear head there. And right away, I just took a shot and hit him in the eye there. And that killed him instantly.
He was looking at you?
Yeah, he was looking at me.
He was awake?
He was awake, yeah. And, well, my first thought, the first thing to do is just to kill him if you can right away. That's what I did. But I couldn't get him out. It was sort of flat. You know, you usually have their bear hole entrance down the side of the creek. And you get him out easy that way. All you have to do is pull him. But pull him upwards is pretty hard. So what I did is cut a hole on top there, and I just opened up all the way to the entrance, and I couldn't roll it. It was so big of a bear, I couldn't hardly move. That of course I'd move him from side to side and try to push and get behind it, try to shove. I couldn't get it. I just couldn't move. And I even used my belt to put around his neck. I get a long pole and try to pry him out. Put that way. All I did was break up my belt. And then I thought of a trick that might work, you know. It was about 2 hours that I tried to get him out. And then I thought of a trick. I thought to myself, suppose I lay two long poles right towards the entrance there. Of course, where it was a little lower. And the entrance was a little higher. And I laid two long poles there. And it was narrow, you know, that bear couldn't fall either way. So I kind of stood him up and then rolled him over, head over heels. And that's the only way I got him out, on top of two poles. Yeah, that's the only bear I caught in my life, lifetime, all alone, I mean. It was about a couple of miles from my cabin. Then I could have cached it there, but instead of that, I packed it all in. I believe I made about 4 or 5 trips. You know, it was so big. The fat alone weighed about 80 pounds. But I was pretty young in them years. I had a regular pack sack. And then I just filled it up with all fat. And it weighed more than 50 pounds because a lot of times we used to handle 50 pounds and it weighed more than that. And I remember my pack straps were just cutting into my shoulder. Yeah, that's the heaviest part of the bear I packed in. Of course, I told my mother about it. She told me, why don't you do it the easier way? Why don't you catch it there and then haul it with dogs? I never thought of that, you know. Yeah. Of course, that would be the easier way.
Where did you have dogs?
Well, I didn't have no dogs with me at that time. I left them with my folks on the Kayak River, where our main cabin was. So that fall, I just walked up. And then a week after that, that's when I started walking around, when the lake started freezing up. And then after it froze good, and the lakes froze good, and then I walked back down to the Kayak River to get my dogs.
How old were you then?
Pardon?
How old were you then?
47. How old? 47. 26, I guess.
If you were going to cache that bear right there,
yep.
How would you do it?
I'd make a little cache right there, like of course there weren't too many tall trees around there, but I suppose I'd make a cache so high off the ground, maybe about 6 feet, and then I'd put the pieces of meat up there. But I'd, I'd have the two poles, regular poles down next to the ground. And of course, I'd have to chop a tree so high up, two trees together. And then I'd, of course, they'd have to be at least three trees close together, a triangle, you know. And then the way I'd do it, I'd make a couple of caches like that. Of course, I couldn't cut them logs so high up. I'd cut them logs so they reached it, that one lone log, and then I'd lay another pole this way, right into the ground. I guess that pole, and that cross log up there would lean against that tree. You know what I mean? And then I'd build a cache that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've built one like that where I killed moose one time, because there was a bunch of dogs loose from the village here.
You want to draw a picture of
it? Yes. Okay. Well, here's the tree. Of course, a regular cache, we'd have to cut it so high up, and then notch it, just like that. And then so far apart, you'd lay a cross log in this notch here. That's where a regular cache would look. But then the way, if you want to make a cache in a hurry, you'd see to it that the tree is pretty far up, pretty clear up to, so far up the tree, no limbs, and that you'd lay here's the cross, here's another tree here. Here's the cross log. Now, you'd lay this, you'd cut the short log that runs this way. Of course, it's running this way. You'd make a notch like this on this one here, and you just lean it against the tree. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that would hold up that way. Here the same way. And then this other log, same way. And then you lay this other log on top of this one here. And then you'd lay poles across. And that's how I built it.
Poles would lay, how would the poles lay across?
Across here. Of course, looking straight down, that the poles would run this way, this pole here. Would run this way, and then you'd lay poles across this way. Get what I mean? Of course, you'd have to.
So these two would go like that.
Yes, mm-hmm. just to hold this cross log up here. You can have it any height you want.
Oh, I see. So when you had three, you'd have these two trees and
one more over here.
With it just like that, uh-huh. Across.
And then you'd lay this one over. On top of this other one here.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. You see how it crosses one another here? Uh-huh. And then you'd lay poles across.
Uh-huh.
Say about the size of my fish, or bigger, or uh-huh. whatever you can find. You just lay them across here, and then you'd have enough room up here, maybe just for one moose. That's what I did.
Let me see if I got another idea. All right.
Mm-hmm.
There's one tree here like this.
Yeah.
And it's got a brace on it like that, and another log going across here.
Mm-hmm.
Another tree like this.
Yeah.
I'll go across like this. And then there's another tree down here.
Mm-hmm.
Like this. And this has got, see, there's a brace goes like that.
Yeah.
And this maybe has another brace here, this. And there's a log that goes across here like that.
Yeah, just across to here. This, of course, this most
this
of the time
sticks out a little bit, and yeah. This one goes beyond that a little bit like that.
Uh-huh.
And then
oh no, it's not that way. explain it to you a little bit. But here's a tree here.
Okay.
And then you'd have this log here as long as you want. It depends on how high you want it.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd notch this log here like this here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's got to be two. You have to put up these two at the same time. You'd lay this one against a tree like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this one running, this one's got a notch.
Right.
And then you put your cross log up here,
yeah,
resting on here.
Yeah.
That way it won't fall over that way because this tree is holding it.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't fall over that way because this brace is holding it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you have your third one over here.
Third one over here and the one by it in front there.
Mm-hmm.
And then this log would be running over that way and this one over that way, but it would lay on top this one. It would look like this.
Right, so
looking straight down.
So looking straight down, there's a tree right here.
Yeah.
And a tree right here.
Yeah, and a tree right there.
A tree right there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That way you build up cash fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty fast.
Well, that's it. We'll put that picture in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With regular cash, you'd have to cut the tree so high up and make an arch up there.
Yeah.
And you'd have four. Maybe you'd have dig a hole out in stick this one in the hole, that would you'd have four legs of a cache. But like I say, if you want to make a quick cache, that's why I built them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You can build any height you want. Mm-hmm.
So when you build that kind of cache, what are you protecting the bear meat from?
From wool. Of course, I was hunting bear in the spring there. From here, and across the island there was a bunch of dogs loose from here. And then that's a good thing they were loose because they stopped the moose from me. If they weren't for them, I would never got this moose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a moose will never run if a dog is chasing it, catch up to it and chasing it. He'll just stand one place. I've caught three moose like that, but the dogs didn't belong to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I never told the owners about it. Yeah. If I told the owners that they'd demand some meat, you know. It so happened that there was four dogs. I was going along the bank on the other side of this island here. I was just going out for hunting moose. And I heard dogs barking back there and howling. And then right away, I knew what it was. And so I tied my dogs there and went got my snowshoes and then went back up, went back there. And there was four or five dogs that stopped, a moose stopped. And what I did was just chase them dogs away. And scare them away, you know. I take a stick and pretend I was going to hit them. They all took off. This moose was just taken off, you know. You found out that dogs weren't any longer around. But then I just got them. Didn't go too far, but I just had one good chance to shoot them. And then, of course, I shot him, and then I butchered it, and I thought about these loose dogs. They'd come back here and eat up the meat, and that's the time I built a cache like that.
Mm-hmm. So it's to protect loose dogs?
Yeah, loose dogs. But out where, way out, further out in the country, you'd have the meat is protected from fox. Wolverine, but a wolverine will always get to your cache one way or another. You can't hardly protect anything from a wolverine. Mm-hmm. And I remember the years when there used to be a lot of white geese up here in Alaska. I'd say around 1928-29. If you kill a bunch of geese, the way you protect them other animals is you dig a hole on the bark or wherever you got them, And you throw them all in there. And you'd cover it over with brush. And that way you'd be waterfowl. You'd be, they'd get protected from other animals like that. But not for long, you know. It's different from spring than in the fall. Well, that's the way people used to catch them that I know of.
What would they do in the spring?
Hunt these geese or ducks.
Oh, and then they catch them. Yeah,
they dig a hole, and then they throw them all in there. There used to be quite a few big bunch of white geese up here, on the Kayak River. Even my old grandfather he'd like to hunt them. And they used to get many. And then in them years, sometimes they used to hunt mostly in canoes, you know. And their canoes couldn't hold that much. They used to hold so much, and so they cast them in a dig a hole, like I say, cast them there, and throw brush over them. Of course, they'd have to come back right away to get them. A bear would get to it. All he had to do is push that brush aside.
Mm-hmm. What would they do in the fall time if they got geese?
Geese? Oh, there's never geese around. You could get in them years. They get them mostly in the spring when they first come in. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, they used to hunt mostly ducks. You know, when the ducks are real fat and could hardly fly. They used to carry canoe into a lake, and certain lakes used to be pretty big, and there used to be quite a few ducks in there. And then they carry a canoe in there and hunt them. Where the time of day they'd get them is when it gets dark, you know. And then the ducks could hardly see. At that time they don't pay attention to what's around. They just like to mill around once along the shore. Sometimes they start feeding. They pay attention mostly to their feeding, and that's the time that the hunters get them. They used to get quite a few of them like that. Of course, after they bring them home, they'd have them plucked, and then they sold them in a barrel, so they'd keep. Mm-hmm.
Just like salting fish?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I heard one kind of funny story one time about what happened out here. Like there's all the time, you know, you talk about hunting and going up there, but there's people that come from other places and come over to hunt.
Yeah.
Or they come over just to travel. Are you pushing that all the time? Yeah. Are they come over to just go up the river for something.
Mm-hmm.
I heard one time there's a whole boatload of creatures came over, and they're coming up the mouth right there, and they got stuck right there. Is that true?
Not here. About 38 miles up the river. There were about seven of them creatures. Of course, they had their wives along. It was in the fall of 47. And I don't remember them getting stuck up here and over here, but they did get stuck up on the Kayak River. You know, they didn't know the main channel, they didn't know the river. And then, they hit a bar, and they couldn't get out right away. I suppose they took their time. Maybe they thought they'd back up and then get out of there. But at the same time, the water was dropping. After it dropped so much, they couldn't move the boat. I don't know how long they were there, maybe about 2 weeks before they ever got out of there. What they did is they went to work like beavers. They dug a tunnel all the way out to the water. And the way they did is they laid long logs under the boat crossways while they dug under. And after they did, they dug about 2 feet beyond the water level. They cut these logs away, and then the boat dropped into the water. But they dug all the way to, out to the river. Is that the way they told it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just had to work real
hard. Oh, they had to work real hard. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were preachers too, and then they said that the only way God got out is that they prayed quite a bit. Mm. Yeah. That's the first first good sized boat I ever being put out back to the river like that. Digging a tunnel. I don't know how far they had to shovel their way. That's hard work, you know. After you get to the water level, you still have to dig beyond it. They were there for about 2 weeks. And then the water never came back up, you know, it just started dropping. And then they had to do something. I guess that's one way of getting the boat out. I guess they taught us how to get a boat out, I guess. Because I've never seen that, heard or never seen that before. Yeah.
So, what did you think about those guys?
Going up to, I don't know where they were going to, maybe the village of Cutoff. Maybe that's where, that was their destination, I wouldn't know. But I'd say they were very determined.
Were they foolish people?
Foolish? No, not the way they appeared. In fact, I've seen only one of them. Of course, they wintered up there, at the old village of Cutoff. And I suppose they left the place by plane, I suppose. And only one stayed with the boat. The man was wondering that was going to bring the boat back up to Fairbanks. And then we had a camp at the mouth of Katil there. And then he was coming down. Of course, he had the motor going. And then he stopped there to spend the night. And that's the only one I seen. I wouldn't say they were foolish, no. But somebody said that whatever materials they got, groceries and whatever, maybe the shovels, axes, all those things they stole, from what I heard. I don't know if that's true, but maybe this person was just saying something against them. I wouldn't know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where did
they stolen from? That's maybe from Anchorage, maybe Fairbanks.
Oh.
Yeah. Got them together here and there. But I don't know if I could believe that.
Maybe that's why they got stuck.
Could be, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember we're going up the Cuyahoga River, moving up in the fall. And they were still pretty, at that time they were pretty high up on the bar. Maybe about 2 feet below the water level. Yeah. That water shore was, water land was way out there. And they were high up on the bar when we were passing through there. So you can imagine how much they worked to get out of there. Including that, the way they had to cut down big trees and lay them on, under the boat, crossways, and digging under the boat. And digging, maybe putting it 2 feet so the boat would float.
How did they push that boat back then?
Well, I don't really know. I suppose they cut on both sides of the locks and maybe they let the boat drop. I didn't hear how they got it back in the water, but it was a pretty good sized boat. No 10 men could hardly handle it. It was a stern wheeler. And it had deck on top too. That's the only way I'd imagine they got it back in the water.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of that book?
It was the Pilgrim.
The Pilgrim?
Mm-hmm. And that, a year after that, when I took a trip to Fairbanks in the summer, I saw it up there, the Pilgrim. So I guess they just left it there and just, they all left the boat, I guess, up at the cutoff. I guess they all just left. From what I heard, this old, one of the old men, he's sort of my uncle. A couple of them were sort of spies or communists. My uncle used to, just told mentioned that. And they were going to get out of this country. I don't know how true that was, but they caught them around St. Michael. They're going to cross over to Siberia. But that's hard. I don't know if I'd believe that.
They said they got caught?
Well, that's according to what he said. They got caught, a couple of them.
What year was that?
In 40, spring of 48. In the spring of 47, fall of 47 is when they went up. I'm sorry that I said that.
We'll leave that off.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We'll erase that part. The part about being communist, that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You better erase it off.
Okay.
Do you feel like maybe taking a break, or do you want to talk some more?
It doesn't matter. Just until we get through. Yeah.
I wanted to ask some questions about, you know, like now.
Yeah.
For instance, you're a council member. You're part of the council, right?
No. And not at present time. No, I'm not a member of council. But my brother is. That is, he sort of volunteered to be a member of the council. There was two boys that were a member of council for a long time. And then I guess they finally gave it up. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to take over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever do that? Were you ever a member of council?
I was about. Let's see. I was a member of the council about in 64 or 65. But then not for long, you know. I was pretty far down the list there, maybe seventh, and then I wasn't too far up there to take things into my own hands. So at that time I was just acting as a first councilman, because the main councilman was up at Glenn working, so he put me in his place. That's the only time I acted as a councilman.
What's the job of a councilman?
Pardon?
What does a councilman have to do?
Oh, well, for instance, if you're building a community hall, you tell everybody to go out and cut so many, each man to cut so many logs. At that time, I was a councilman at that time. And we had a meeting about it, and then we agreed that all the men would go out and cut so many logs. And then, of course, we pull it up the bank whenever they bring them in. And then we all agreed that we would start building it right away. The present community hall is. We didn't even let the logs dry. We just started building it. And then a councilman, what he does is, whenever a big time comes around, is he'd get the people together, have a meeting, especially about collecting money for the events, like dog races, snowshoe races, and so forth. And getting ready for a potlatch, And also getting wood for the community hall. And or who would be the timekeeper? And who would be, I don't know what you call it, who would be sergeant of arms, you know, tell people what the next event would be to get ready for it during the good time. Of course, the main councilman, that is where they come in, is that they get the people together and have a meeting, and then talk about what events we'd have and what time of the day and when. And also to elect a new councilman. And then if there's any sort of work coming up, of course the council would get the men together and get everybody together to have a meeting about it. Certain work to be done. And that's the only thing I can think of now.
Mm-hmm. Does the council have anything to do with things like that laundry, you know, the laundry over there and the showers, or do they have anything to do with that?
No, not so far since it was built. Whoever ran it, they just keep running it day after day, and whenever something breaks down, they shut it down. And there's no councilman involved in that.
Mm. Were you involved in any of the things like talking about starting up the laundry and the water plant?
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, we did have a meeting about it, and we were all against it. Of course, I spoke up against it because, there was two or three people came to discuss it with us. And then some of us were against it, saying that we did our own laundry, and we did our own washing up in our own wash tubs. And that what we thought that after they put that up, laundry up for so long that it was going to be turned over to us, and that we'd have to standard cost per operation, and then we couldn't afford. That's what we thought, and just in the kind of that we're against it. Yeah.
What do you think about it now? Did that happen?
No, it's the government is standing the cost of that operation. Yeah. Whereas if we had to operate, I don't think we'd afford it.
Mm-hmm. Is that the village corporation?
No, it's not a village. It's just what you call this now? I wouldn't know. It's not health and welfare, it's something else. But anyway, it's still operated by the government. Yeah, like this people up there in Huslia. They've got all their sewers and pipelines installed on the ground into each home. And then this electricity plant, power plant, the government stood the cost of that operation for so long, and then it was turned over to them. And then they're on their own now on that. So I guess they could stand the cost of operating it. But here, if that ever happens here, I don't think we stand the cost. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially the fuel. It takes so much of fuel to run these generators.
Well, what about electricity then? What do you think about?
Oh, I don't know. Of course, they'd mention it now and then whenever we had a meeting. But from what I understood, it cost us somewhere about 30,000 to 35,000. That's that we'd have to stand that cost.
That's the corporation you have to pay for that?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, so it's people just would?
Whatever the village had. That's what somebody told me. Like, we'd have to buy our own wires. We'd have to hire an electrician to install that panel in the powerhouse. We'd have to buy these transformers. And altogether, that might just come up to around 30 or 35,000. About. And then well, I guess that's about the only thing we have to pay for. I guess the government will have to stand for the fuel. Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think about other new things? Like, okay, there's the water plant. What do you think about the water that comes out of that water plant?
Well, it seems just a little too hard. It might be good for. Of course, people drink that, but then I myself couldn't stand it very long because it sort of dries up my mouth, and then it gets the pots pretty black. Well, maybe it's due to being hard, but then it, on the other hand, it's good for washing. And of course, I'd haul it by the barrel after we run low. We just use that for washing.
Just for washing.
Just for washing, yeah. Washing dishes, washing our face, just like this here. And then, of course, we used to drink it. But then lately, it seems that I just couldn't stand too much of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So before you had this plant, how did you get your water, say, summertime and wintertime?
Of course, we drink it from the river. Mm-hmm. And in the fall, we used to cut blocks of ice, and then when that runs out, we used to get ice from wherever we could get it from. Mm-hmm. Throughout the winter, we used mostly ice.
So how would you get that ice?
Of course, we saw it in the fall, cut out in the fall, about this time. Mm-hmm. And then we stand up after we grab a hold of that ice tongs and then drag it. It's easy to handle on the ice.
So this time you'd cut it in the river?
Yes, cut it from the river.
There's no ice now, huh?
Pretty hard to cross now. Yeah. Last year, Gary and I cut it from the lake across there. I mean, back there in the lake. Mm-hmm. Of course, he wanted to learn. Yeah. So he was with me.
So how much would you cut?
Oh, we didn't cut too much at that time. Mm-hmm. Because it was kind of a little too thick. Of course, we worked only for about a couple of hours. We probably cut out maybe about 50 blocks. Of course, weighing each about 200 pounds.
One block?
One block, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. But it's easy to handle, especially when you grab hold of it with ice tongs and you pull it out. It's easy, no matter how heavy it is. But to stand up, it's hard to handle.
So yeah. How big an area would that be?
Oh, I'd say from here to the wall, uh-huh. And about that wide, and about that long from here to the wall, and about that wide.
Oh,
that's
so
about
that
how much we cut last year.
That's about.
It was pretty thick.
20 by 15.
Not quite. Maybe about 18 by 12, 14. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's a couple feet thick.
You know, it was pretty thick, about this thick. We usually wait until it's about this thick. Mm-hmm. It's easy handling, much easier handling then.
About
anywhere from 8 inches to a foot. Mm-hmm. But last year it was pretty thick. So that way, it was a little harder to cut.
But you said that wasn't that much ice. When you would go out and cut a lot, how much would you cut?
Oh. It depends on how much you cut and how long it's going to last. Of course, I was using some, and the school was using some out of them 50 blocks.
So part of that was your work for the school?
No. It was a weekend.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then he'd use some, but not too much of it. There was only two of them there. But I believe we used more than him, more than them. They did.
Mm-hmm. And how did you
get it? With a regular flat saw, hand, a wood saw. Of course, the way my father taught me how to do it is you cut along with axe first. Maybe about 3 inches deep with axe all along. And then you cut one end and you put saw in there and start sawing. It depends on the thickness of the ice, how fast you cut. The thinner, the faster you cut. But in this way, you cut faster. And then crossways, you do the same thing. Of course, you'd have to take the corner block out first in order to for the rest of the ice to be loose. You'd have to cut across with axe first, and then you'd have to break it instead of sawing. That way it breaks all the way across and it comes loose. You don't, of course, on the outer cut, you use a saw, but not crossways. Because if you saw a crossways, that'll take time. And it's just a waste of time. So the way my old man taught me is that you just cut all the way across with axe, and then you hit here and there, and it just breaks off the whole thing.
So what do you hit it with?
With an axe. It depends on, you can cut any width you want. A regular width would be about this wide.
Oh, so about 2.5 feet.
About them, yeah. And then, like I said, you'd cut about 3 inches deep all along. And then instead of using saw, you'd hit with axe here and there, and the whole thing breaks off. Oh. Yeah, and then the same way when you're cutting blocks, you just cut it the size you want instead of using saw. That saw is just a waste of time. It's all right for the outer cut. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just break off and be floating there and
oh yes. Sometimes we on one row, there'd be as many as 10 or 12. Of course, they'd be floating around because there's lots of room. And then you'd grab with a tongs and drag it further away from this open place. Mm-hmm. If you stack it too close in the winter, that's where the overflow will come from this big open place. Oh. So you drag it away as far as you can.
So you don't haul it all one time?
No, not one time. Kind of maybe about 2-3 blocks at a time.
Just when you need it?
Yeah, when I need it, yeah. Of course, he was interested in that, and he wants to do the same thing this fall.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then would you ever fish in places where you cut out ice?
Oh, well, just under the ice, on the river. And you'd cut here and there. of course, you'd have to start fishing, cutting ice when the ice isn't too thick. Anywhere from 5 to 8 inches thick. The less the thickness is, the less work you do. And then the way they sit out fishing it under the ice is they cut holes about, it depends on how long your fishing it is. You say about 10 feet apart, you cut holes. And then you'd put cut a long pole and tie a string to it, and you'd shove it towards that next hole. And then you'd have a fork, cut a willow with a fork, and you'd work it towards that next hole until you're all the way to the end. And then when the end of the pole gets to the last hole, you'd pull the pole out. Of course, there's a string tied to it.
So the string's running all the way from
all the way, maybe for about, sometimes for about 40, 50 feet, depending on how long the fishnet is. And then you tie your end of the fishnet out, I mean, the end of this string. And there, of course, you'd have to be two. One person pulling that string while the other person is putting in the fishnet. That's the way you put in, sitting fishing under the ice.
Will you do that this year?
No, I never did that ever since I got to work for the school. Mm-hmm. They're, right now they're doing that up a little above the bluff.
Who's doing that?
The Mary in Huntington. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then up at Bishop Rock, they've got two or three in like that.
So do you get all the fish you need during the summer?
Oh, well, of course, right now they're fishing for mostly whitefish. Mostly whitefish and some cheefish. Of course, sometimes when you get enough of this whitefish, you could sell some for your own use. Of course, we put up most of our eating and dog feed in the summer. But in a place like, if you are going to fall out in a place like Bishop Rock, you do some fishing.
But when you're staying in town, you don't.
Well, if we feel like it, we would do that. But then we'd eat mostly moose meat. But the kids here to go for mostly than the fish.
Well, why would it be different? You just said if somebody falls out at Bishop Rock, that you would fish there.
Well, just have something to do, you know. At this time of the year, this whitefish is running heavy, so just have something to do and then get that much extra fish, and then you could sell some. Mm.
Been talking a long time, so we could break for a while.